This is the Everything Financial Radio program brought to you by PLP Services. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Welcome. Joining me on today's program, Mr. Larry Reed, whose book, Real Heroes, is now number one on the Amazon bestseller list, and also the publisher of Trends Journal, Mr. Gerald Celente. Before I get to my interview with Mr. Reed, let me tell you that we do have a couple of free Social Security maximization workshops coming up here in the Grand Rapids area. For more information, you can visit socialsecurityradio.com. Joining me once again on the Everything Financial Radio program is Larry Reed. Larry is the president of the Foundation for Economic Education. I'm a big fan of their work. You can check it out at fee.org. And he is also the author of a current number one Amazon bestseller. It's titled Real Heroes, Inspiring True Stories of Courage, Character, and Conviction. Got endorsements on the book from Steve Forbes and Senator Rand Paul, just to name a couple. And Larry, first of all, welcome to the program and congratulations on the success of your book.
Thank you very much, Dennis. I'm very pleased with it and delighted, as always, to be on your show.
Well, let's just talk about the book and talk about what motivated you to write it.
Okay. Well, I've long been interested in the importance of character, especially as character relates to liberty. I really think the two things are two sides of the same coin, that if people who lack character will not retain their liberties, if they ever have them at all, and if people who enjoy liberty, if they want to keep it, had better retain their character. So the opportunity to write about some people that I admire, mostly from the past, who both supported liberty and also were exemplars of good character, was just too good to pass up. So I've got 40 chapters in this book. Each one deals with a different person, going all the way back to Cicero in ancient Rome to many people from the 20th century as well.
Well, Larry, I think it'd be fascinating as a bit of a history buff to maybe walk through some of your favorite profiles. Out of the 40, do you have a favorite?
Yeah, I think maybe I'd have to give that prize to the gentleman from Poland named Witold Pilecki. And he was one that I didn't even know about until I was well into the process of writing the book. And I took a side trip and investigated and realized, wow, this guy is probably the bravest man I've ever known of. He fought valiantly against the Soviets for Polish independence in 1918 to 21 as a teenager. And then Poland, of course, did secure its independence after that. But in 1939, the Nazis invaded the country from the west, and then the Soviets, 2 weeks later, invaded Poland from the east. And Pilecki said goodbye to his two children, who are still living today, by the way, and his wife, and joined the resistance, fought valiantly. It was decorated many times. And then after a year of fighting, when the Polish resistance began to hear some reports from a place called Auschwitz, the notorious Nazi concentration camp, they decided they needed somebody on the inside to report on what was going on there. And Pilecki volunteered. He said, I'll get arrested, and I'll hope that the Germans won't just kill me, that maybe they'll send me to Auschwitz. So that was a big gamble to begin with. And they did send him there, and for 2.5 years, he formed a very vibrant resistance against the Nazis, even creating a makeshift radio for a time and broadcasting news of what was happening inside Auschwitz to the rest of the world. And the combination of the documents that he smuggled out and the reports that he himself later, when he escaped, was able to make, the radio transmissions, they became known as Witold's Report, the first comprehensive eyewitness accounts of the Holocaust at the most notorious Nazi concentration camp. He finally escaped, which few people ever did, fought in the Warsaw Uprising, was captured again by the Germans. They didn't put two and two together and realize he was the same guy back at Auschwitz. So he spent the last few months of the war in a German prisoner of war camp. And then after the war, after enjoying a little bit of freedom, he became a spy against the Soviet occupiers of Poland. And for 2 years, he spied on them and smuggled out reports about what they were trying to do in Poland to take the country over. He was ultimately executed by the communists, but wow, what a brave man, and I just admired him tremendously.
What a story, and I think if you were to survey all of our listeners and ask them who Vital Paletsky is, including me, we wouldn't have had a clue.
No, but I'm happy to tell you that since I wrote this chapter, I've come to know an American film producer by the name of David Aaron Gray, who, coincidentally, has been working on a major motion picture based on Paletsky, and that'll be coming out in December of 2017. So the world, including Americans, are soon to find out a lot more about him when they see that picture.
You know, I noticed also, and we've got maybe about 4 minutes left in this segment, I noticed also in the book that you profile someone else that we may have our listeners be a bit more familiar with. Jesse Owens is also listed.
Yes, and of course he has some Michigan connections too. In 1935, as an Ohio State student, he came to the Big Ten championships at Ann Arbor and walked away with four world records that he won in 45 minutes in spite of a serious back injury. And that set him up for the 1936 Berlin Olympics in Germany, where he became the first American to win four gold medals at the Olympics. And the most famous moment, of course, was when Hitler expressed his disdain that a black man could be allowed to win Olympic medals. But nonetheless, he acknowledged Owens. The sad thing was that our own president, Franklin Roosevelt, snubbed him. Roosevelt invited all the white Olympians after the Berlin Games to come to the White House, but pointedly refused to invite Jesse Owens because he was black.
It's amazing how many of today's, I didn't know that incidentally, and it's amazing to me as you say that. What strikes me is that it's amazing to me how many of our current progressive, liberal, leftist politicians, whatever term you want to use, really look up to Franklin Roosevelt. Is that might be something they're just ignoring.
Yeah, most of them know it, I think. But you know, these are people who they put certain values, like putting government in charge of her life, ahead of many other things. So they'll look askance at a terrible blot like that if you're on the right side of their other issues. So you know, they would condemn anyone else of a different political perspective for snubbing Jesse Owens, but FDR is one of their icons, so they often just ignore that or never tell you about it.
So, Larry, in the time we have left, I want to talk to you more about your book in the next segment, but share with the listeners a bit about your work with FEE.org, or the Foundation for Economic Education.
Yes, our work at FEE is aimed primarily at high school and college students, although we have a very robust website, one of the leading ones in the world, in fact, from a liberty perspective, fee.org, that appeals to anybody of any age. But our main focus is on young people. We look to inspire them with ideas of personal responsibility, character, integrity, free markets, limited government, all the things that we think made America great in the first place. And we do that not just through the website, but through seminars, through online courses, through presentations on campuses and at schools all over the country and sometimes abroad. And we're now getting about 1.3 million unique visitors to our website every month. So we're growing like crazy.
Well, congratulations, and I would encourage the listeners to not only check out your work, but support it as well. I am a big fan. We're chatting today with Larry Reed, number one best-selling author of the book Real Heroes, and we'll continue our conversation with him when Everything Financial Radio returns. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. Glad you're listening today. Let me remind you, if you're just joining us, we do have a couple of free Social Security maximization workshops coming up here in the Grand Rapids area. Visit socialsecurityradio.com for more information. I have the pleasure of chatting today with Mr. Larry Reed. Larry is the president of the Foundation for Economic Education. I'd encourage you to check out their website at fee.org. Larry is also the Amazon number one best-selling author of the book Real Heroes, Inspiring True Stories of Courage, Character, and Conviction. I would encourage you to check it out. Larry, let's talk about some more real heroes. I think you mentioned in the last segment that one of the 40 real heroes that you profile in your book goes all the way back to the days of ancient Rome, and we're talking about Cicero.
That's right. The very first chapter in Real Heroes deals with Cicero. He was the greatest defender of the old Roman Republic and its liberties. He lived in the first century before Christ as the Roman Republic was crumbling under the weight of the growing warfare state, where power was increasingly concentrated in Rome, and it was increasingly redistributing people's incomes, politicians buying votes with other people's money, and so forth. Cicero stood foursquare against that and tried to turn it around. He may have lengthened the Republic by a couple of decades. So it was a heroic struggle that he made. But even though he wasn't ultimately successful, he left behind a treasure trove of writings, more than anybody else who lived before the year 1000 A.D. We have that much in the way of his letters and speeches. And again, he provided a ringing defense of things like private property and limited government and personal responsibility. It was a great man whose message still resonates 2,000 years later.
You know, Larry, I know maybe we weren't planning on going here, but I think back to an interview we've done in the past and a piece you wrote about Are We Rome? And it might be interesting for the listeners if you just took a minute or so and talked about some of the parallels and maybe some of the things that Cicero is fighting against and what we're seeing today.
Yeah, there are a lot of parallels. That last century of the Roman Republic before it gave way to the dictatorship of the empire that lasted for another 500 years, that last century of the Republic was notable for a growing welfare state, politicians promising goodies at other people's expense, faction fighting against faction to get in charge of this growing government apparatus of redistribution, and the fact that really good people increasingly didn't run for office because they thought this business of government taking from some and giving to others has become so corrupt and so base that who would want to be in charge of it? So good people increasingly didn't run for offices in ancient Rome, and the bad people did, and that only made matters worse. So that certainly resonates today in so many ways in America. When you lose your character and then you expect things like government to take care of you, then you have to expect you're not going to get good people running society. You're going to get the worst, the people who love to lord it over others and who will be happy to steal from some and give to you if they can get your vote with it.
You know, and Larry, we'll get to a couple of other real heroes in a second, but you're such a great historian. When a country or a society loses its character, in your view, do they ever get it back, and if so, how?
Well, they certainly can. There's, you know, anything that involves human volition or free will implies that nothing is inevitable. You can change. You can change your mind. Many people can change their minds. They may be brought to their senses through education or through crisis or through both. So it's not inevitable that a society decline, but it's rather rare that once one goes down this path that it actually does turn around. Now, I can think back to Great Britain after it lost the colonies, which became the United States. For many years thereafter, Britain was in decline, but in the 19th century, it completely turned around. There was a revival of character. We think of it now as a time of Victorian values. And by 1900, Britain was the mightiest power on the globe with the highest standard of living. So, yeah, you can turn things around, but it does require a rededication to the principles that work, things like private property, responsibility, and limited government and free enterprise.
Well, we are chatting today with the Amazon number one best-selling author of the book Real Heroes, Mr. Larry Reed. And, Larry, you mentioned a name in your book, and you profile someone in your book that was also, maybe this is embarrassing for me to admit on the air, someone that I was not familiar with, Fanny Crosby. Can you enlighten the listeners?
Yes, what a great woman she was. She died 101 years ago this past February in 1915. And when she died, she was the most revered American woman and had been for decades. Well, Fanny Crosby wrote more lyrics to more songs than anybody in human history. Almost all the lyrics she wrote were for hymns. She wrote almost 9,000 hymns. We still sing them in churches today, such as Blessed Assurance, To God Be the Glory, and so forth. She also was the first woman to address the United States Congress. She knew more American presidents than any other human being ever in our history. I mean, we've had 44 presidents, but she actually knew 21 of them, either when they were president or in the years thereafter. Every president from John Quincy Adams to Woodrow Wilson, she knew. She also holds the record for, well, I mentioned that, about the most number of hymns. But the most remarkable thing about her is that she was completely blind from the age of 6 months. She never saw a thing. And yet she was so phenomenally productive, and a woman that so many Americans, even in high places, sought to meet and to converse with, because she was just one amazing woman.
Well, that is a remarkable story. For our listeners that are just joining us, we're chatting today with Larry Reed, author of the book Real Heroes. And Larry, we've got about 3 minutes left in this segment, so let's talk about Andrew Mellon, someone that, incidentally, I was familiar with before we started the conversation, for the record.
Yeah, I think Andrew Mellon was the greatest Secretary of the Treasury that we've ever had, and we've had almost 80 of them. He was the third longest serving Treasury Secretary for about just under 11 years under three presidents, Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover. He was an architect of substantial tax cuts of the 1920s, which caused the economy to just explode with productivity. He cut the estate tax in half from 40% to 20%. He cut the income tax rates across the board very dramatically. And as Treasury Secretary, he reduced the size of his own department. In fact, my good friend and historian Burton Folsom once calculated that Andrew Mellon reduced the staff of the Treasury Department on average by one person for every day of the 10.5 years he was in the office. And he also helped reduce the total size of government spending. It was a little less at the end of the Coolidge administration than it was when Mellon had taken office under Warren Harding.
Well, I can't imagine that there's been probably any secretary of any government department or government agency that's probably ever done that. That's got to be pretty unique.
Yeah, it's pretty rare. Most of them get a little intoxicated with power and notoriety and the limelight, and they think that the best thing to do is to grow their department irrespective of the value of what it's doing.
So, Larry, last question in the time we have left. Are there any real heroes out there today?
Well, I think so. One of the points of the book is, in fact, to notice around us that there are heroes in our midst. I purposely chose many heroes to talk about that people didn't know about, because I wanted to drive home the point that they are all around us, not just actual heroes, but potential heroes. And if you want more of them, well, then keep an eye out for them and encourage them. These are people who live lives of sterling character, who are good examples for the people around them, and who not only do spur-of-the-moment heroic things, but live heroism every day of their life. And I just hope the book encourages people to find such folks, recognize them, and spread the message of their good works.
Well, Larry, congratulations on the book, and thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Dennis.
Well, be sure to stay with us. After the break, we'll be talking to Mr. Gerald Salente, publisher of Trends Journal, a lot to talk about, including politics, and is the stock market going to hang in there? So stay with us. I'll be back after these words with Gerald Celente.
Give me your money.
This is the Everything Financial Radio program brought to you by PLP Services. Quick reminder, on Thursday, October 13, we will be having a Social Security Maximization Workshop at the Highlands Golf Club in Grand Rapids. And on Tuesday, October 18, we'll be at Nodo's Old World Italian Restaurant. Both meetings begin at 6 p.m. and conclude at 7:30 p.m. with a complimentary dinner. If you're between the ages of 55 and 69, and want to learn how to maximize your Social Security benefits under the new rules, we would encourage you to attend. You can register or get more information at socialsecurityradio.com. The website, again, socialsecurityradio.com. Joining me once again on the Everything Financial Radio program today is one of my favorite guests, Mr. Gerald Celente. Mr. Celente is the publisher of the Trends Journal, and he is the director of the Trends Research Institute. Gerald, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Dennis.
Gerald, in your most recent Trends Journal, there's an article that I thought was very interesting titled People Power, the New World Order. Talk about it, would you please?
Well, look around what's going on throughout Europe. There are populist movements everywhere, and the media derides them. They call them right-wing movements. Anything that's not part of what they're doing is either considered right-wing or radical. But look what happened with the Brexit vote in the UK. It was every world leader of prominence virtually went over there, including Obama and Abe from Japan, to tell the people that they should not leave the EU. And the people said, we're leaving. And this is despite all the pressure that they got. It's people power. They didn't listen to politicians. Look at the elections that just happened in Germany with the AfD party, Alternative for Deutschland, and how they defeated Merkel's party, even, to the extent of gaining more seats. But not only that, but even in Berlin, where her base is, and her hometown, her home area, they scored up impressive numbers. And then you look what's going on in Austria. They have the Freedom Party. It's going to be the first, the election, as a matter of fact, is coming up, I believe, October 4th. And they're set to win as well. And you go to the Netherlands, you go to Italy with the five-star movement. They elected a woman as mayor of Rome, Virginia Raggi, a 37-year-old woman, and another woman to the mayor of Torino, the fourth largest city in Italy. So you see, what people are fed up with these politicians. Look at the American presidential race, the presidential reality show. Look at these two people. Then you have people arguing which jerk is better than the other jerk. And then you look at the polls, Dennis. Both of these candidates, Trump and Clinton, have the lowest popularity ratings and highest untrustworthy ratings of any president running for office in modern history. So the people power is that the people are fed up with the systems, and they have the power to change it. And they have the courage to change it overseas, but they don't have the courage to change it in North America.
Gerald, to what extent do you expect this people power movement, this direct democracy movement potentially, to intensify?
It's intensifying around the world. All it needs is a group. Everything starts from the ground up, not the top down, according to many historians, and I believe in that. I believe in the quote of Samuel Adams that it does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in the minds of men. Andrew Jackson, one person of courage makes a majority. The atmosphere, the conditions have never been stronger in my lifetime, and I have a pretty good track record in the political field of calling these things, Many books, I taught American politics and campaign technology. I designed and instructed it at St. John's University. I ran political campaigns in Westchester County in New York at a graduate school. I ran the number two guy running the mayoral race in Yonkers at 23 years old. It's a city of 300,000 people. You know, I know the experience. I know the atmosphere. It's never been better than now. It just takes the people behind it to make it happen.
Well, Gerald, it's always so enlightening to talk to you, and I know our listeners would probably like to learn more about the Trends Journal. So before I forget and before we move on, maybe let them know how to get more information about your publication.
Well, they could go to our website, Trends Research, trendsresearch.com. And, you know, the Trends Journal, all the information is there. But it's more than just a Trends Journal, Dennis. We do a Trends Monthly, and the Trends Journal is a quarterly. You see it. It's a 54-page magazine, full color, no advertisement. And we do a Trend Alert each week. And, of course, we do Trends in the News broadcasts each Monday through Friday. And we have conferences. So it's a lot more than just a Trends Journal. It's only $99 a year. And for those people that are having difficult times, and many people are these days, we have a discount request page. We try to make it available to everyone.
Well, I would encourage the listeners to check that out. And if you're just joining us, we are chatting with Mr. Gerald Celente, publisher of the Trends Journal. Gerald, you know, with the first presidential debate taking place last week, a lot of people would probably be interested in what your take is on this election. How are you calling it, if you are?
Well, we were calling Trump. And again, we're political atheists. I'm not voting for any of these two. The only way I'd vote for either of them is somebody put a gun to my head, because I'm not willing to die for a cause. Yeah, just to make it clear, you know. And they both disgust me, just at different levels. And we were picking Trump as the winner because the negativity ratings, again, are so high on both of them. But again, we talked about the populist movement, and Trump is a pop populist. He's not the real deal. But he's playing enough into the card of people want something new. However, we've made it very clear that the election was Trump's to win or lose, and because he's such a narcissist and he can't control himself, he keeps shooting himself in the foot, or the mouth, I should say, and destroying his chances. So Clinton baited him at the debate, and he fell for it. So the debate is his to the election is his to win or lose, and I want to make this very clear. There's still a month left. This could change at any time, and I also want to make it clear that it could change from an outside source. And no, not the BS that Russians hacking into the Democratic National Committee's emails. What a bunch of phony garbage that is. There's no proof at all. All it is innuendo. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about something serious. Serious on the level of a terror strike, false flag, or real. Something to do with another element, an outside force. And, of course, Julian Assange cannot stand Hillary Clinton because she's a warmonger. That red dress fit her perfectly. All the blood on her hands and her husband's, with him bombing Iraq every 4 days when he was president, putting sanctions on the Iraqis that killed over 500,000 Iraqi children under the age of five. Go on YouTube, put in Madeleine Albright, Leslie Stahl, CBS, when she asks Madeleine Albright Clinton's Bill Clinton's Secretary of State, if the price of 500,000 children under the age of five was worth the sanctions, and she said, yes, it was. Look at Hillary Clinton when they asked her how she felt when Gaddafi was murdered, sodomized with a sword. She goes, we came, we saw, he died. These are psychopaths. They should take him away, boy, with a white jacket into an insane asylum. So what I'm saying is, with this war drums beating louder, with the talk about Russia and Ukraine and on, blaming Russia for what's going on in Syria, look for something outside the field to happen. This election could change at any time. Going back to Assange, he can't stand Clinton for the same reason I can't. The warmonger. Assad has to go, Gaddafi has to go, Afghanistan, Iraq, one after another. And I launched Occupy Peace, occupypeace.us. People could go see it. I put my money where my mouth is. Assange said he's going to be releasing detrimental information on Clinton by the hacking of the emails. So if something really serious comes out, that could be the end.
Well, we are chatting today with Gerald Celente. He is the publisher of Trends Journal. He is also the director of Trends Research Institute. The bad news is we are out of time in this segment, but the good news is Gerald is going to join us for another segment. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm chatting today with Mr. Gerald Celente. Gerald is the publisher of Trends Journal. He's the director of the Trends Research Institute, and we are continuing our conversation with him in this segment. Glad you're along today. Gerald, let's talk about this oil deal that's fresh news.
Well, you know, it looks like a lot of nothing, and all they're doing is jawboning the markets up when you really look at it. Because what was the deal? They may do a deal by November, and they're only cutting back about 750,000 gallons a day, barrels a day, and there's 2 million in excess. And every time the price goes up, you know, the rigs go back online. Already when the prices hit $50 a barrel, you saw another 100 rigs go online that were closed down. So, and then again, this is only an OPEC deal, and there's all those non-OPEC members, including the United States, which by 2020 is going to be pumping more oil and gas than Russia and Saudi Arabia. So there's just too much supply and not enough demand. And it all really ties in because there's a global recession going on. You look at the numbers that just came out yesterday from a couple of days ago, earlier in the week, with the World Trade Organization downgrading world trade to the lowest level since the panic of 08. And then look at the IMF report that came out. It looks like they're downgrading once again, as they always do. So as we're looking at the facts here, you know, we have a global recession going on. There, you look at the numbers coming out of Japan, you know, where their imports, exports, anyway, imports are down like, you know, 17%. You know, I mean, if the yen is so strong, how come they're not buying more? You know, and same thing with China. So we're looking at a global recession. Look at the numbers coming from the World Trade Organization. Go back to the commodities. Think about what the IMF is saying, a deflationary cycle. Why? Because commodity prices are so low. There's too much product and not enough money to buy it. It's as simple as that. There's enough money to buy it, but the money is concentrated in the hands of a few. I'm not making that up. 62 people, everybody listening knows 62 people. 62 people have more money than half the world's population combined, more wealth than half the world's population combined. In the United States, since Obama became president, 95% of the wealth went to the 1%. So you have an excess of product and not enough people with money to buy them.
So, Gerald, given that, in your view, we're in a global recession, I would share that view, incidentally. And when you take a look at the too big to fail banks, aren't they in more trouble? Aren't we just setting ourselves up for a repeat of 2008, but it's going to be even more dramatic?
Look, one thing that Donald Trump said that I agree, two things, by the way, that I agreed with what he said at the debate. It's not a debate, by the way. He got 2 minutes to answer the question. You know, what is this baloney? What do you need a moderator there for? Just ask him questions. Let him go back and forth. Give him 10 minutes on each question and let them question each other. When they had the Lincoln-Douglas debates, the first person spoke for 60 minutes, the second person spoke for 90 minutes, and then there was a 30-minute rejoinder from the first person. And they got this little clown show going on with a moderator, a little jerk that reads teleprompters, and they call them journalists. Anyway, going back to what you were I forgot what the question was.
Well, your answer was entertaining regardless, Gerald. No, the question was the too big to fail banks.
Yes.
Aren't we
and
setting ourselves up for the
Trump
same thing?
Said, the other thing that Trump said was the bubble. The bubble that's been inflated, that's the other thing that I agreed with him with. The first one was that he wouldn't use the first strike nuclear because it would be the beginning of the end of the world. And the second thing was the bubble. This is a phony bubble pumped up by cheap money. Everybody knows it. It's an economic Ponzi scheme. The money is going to stock buybacks at record levels in merger and acquisition activity, and then you have the Bank of England, the Bank of Japan, the banks of the European Central Bank buying up government and corporate bonds. Buying up corporate bonds. It's the merger of state and corporate powers. Mussolini called it fascism. And it goes back to the global recession. All they're doing is enriching the rich. You go back to the populist movements. Do you think people would care who's elected if they were making money, if they had a nice lifestyle? The jobs stink. The benefits are leaving them. They have no future. It's all tied together.
So, Gerald, what's your take? Are we going to see a stock market crash like we saw in 2007, 2008? And if so, what's your take on timing? I know that's a difficult question.
My timing's way off. It should have happened in 2012. But who knew that they were going to make something up called negative interest rates? Who knew they would come up with a thing called quantitative easing and buying corporate bonds? Negative interest rates? It's never happened in the history of the world. So they keep coming up with these schemes undreamed of. It's Ponzi-nomics. It's not capitalism. It's bankism. So I don't know when it's going to happen. We would have thought it happened this year. There's still time, however, for an October surprise.
So do you think, the Fed's got really one tool left. They go back and start another quantitative easing program. Is that where they're going to go?
No, we believe they're going to go through it. They're going to next game they're talking up is fiscal stimulus. The governments that have already failed in virtually everything else that they're doing, they're going to spend more money in building the infrastructure. You know, they kind of come up with some baloney line, spend a lot of our dough to give to our friends to build hardly anything, to their friends, rather, that they call campaign contributions, their bribes and payoffs. So what you're going to start seeing is infrastructure, fiscal spending. That's going to be the next one. As all these governments are in deep debt, they'll put us deeper in debt, raise our taxes, and make life harder for us. So I don't think it's going to be through the Fed this time. I think it's going to be more through the governments.
Gerald, in the time we have left, you had another article in your most recent Trends Journal, and you labeled it one of the top trends of 2016. And the article was simply titled Self-Sustainability. Can you expand on that?
Yes. Go back to Brexit. If I lived in the UK, I'd be stamping out as many products as I could and go back to the populist movement, keep putting it all together, go back to the anti-globalization. And that's, by the way, that's what the World Trade Organization, when they released their data, they're concerned about, quote, protectionism. How about made in UK with pride? How about made in Canada with love? How about made or with care? How about made in USA? How about... Here we are, a country in the United States of 320 million people, and we're too stupid to make our own shirts, shoes, computers, and other essentials? Of course not. It's only being done because, and that's the other thing that gives Trump the populist card, is his anti-free trade agreements. This isn't free trade. It's multinationals getting products made in slave labor companies, bringing them back and marking up the prices. So you have countries that have the natural and human resources to be self-sustaining, to get the globalization. If I want prosciutto, I want to buy it from Italy. You know, but I don't need to buy my shoes from China. This is what I'm saying. You rebuild your economies, put people back to work with manufacturing jobs, self-sustaining economies at every level.
So... Gerald, let's talk a little bit about, we've got a couple minutes left here. You also mentioned the recent Trends Journal. There's an article called Boomers Turn 70, and talk about the opportunity that might present. Can you expand on that a bit in a couple minutes?
It's one of the biggest opportunities out there. It's the boomers, it's worldwide. You know, after World War II, everybody came back and they were happy. So there were a lot of kids that were created. And now we're hitting 70 years old this year. So when you're aging, you know, you start, you know, as I say, when the boomers age, they're going deaf, blind, and out of their mind. You're seeing Alzheimer's disease. You're seeing glaucoma, macular degeneration. You're losing your hearing. The opportunities in this and so many different broad fields of technology beyond medical are going to be enormous. And then there's the whole natural healing, whole health healing way. For example, you're old, you're not feeling well, you have a couple of bucks, you want to get better. How about going to a longevity center? Where are they? Find me one. I don't know of any. Really true ones. By the way, I also have a honorary doctorate of law from the National University of Health Sciences. So one of my first books I worked on was Natural Healing way back in the 80s. So there's a whole movement in many directions. Is everybody going to go that way? No. But a lot of people are. It's like organic food. Yeah, what is it, $43 billion out of a $400 billion market? You know, it's small but big because you have so many people. So this is a field to really look into. Again, beyond drugs and bioengineering, beyond that, you start looking, oh, you're going blind, you macular degeneration or whatever it might be, and the drug and medical industry can't solve it. How about a virtual reality eye? You know, will that become something? We believe that's the direction a lot of this is going to go in. You're losing your mind. How about artificial intelligence? Alzheimer's. The opportunities are far-reaching, and it's just beginning. And when I talk about this, remember, you know, the whole digital age is really only, about 22 years old. 1994 is when people started getting computers. I mean, you didn't get online viewing. You had these staccato movements going on, if you were lucky to have them at all. You had discs. I mean, people forget this. So trends are born, they grow, they mature, reach old age, and die. The whole technology trend in internet and virtual reality and artificial intelligence, this is like a, you know, it's just out of the mother's womb when you put it in the time of space. So this is going to be a huge opportunity, very far-reaching.
Well, that's all the time we have. Our guest today has been Gerald Celente. Gerald is the publisher of Trends Journal. And Gerald, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, Dennis, and all the best. Thanks for all you're doing.
Well, thanks for listening this week. If you would like to go back and listen to any of the interviews that we do with our guest experts here on the program, all you need to do is visit the website, everythingfinancialradio.com. The website, once again, is everythingfinancialradio.com. You can listen to the interviews that I did today with Mr. Gerald Celente and Mr. Larry Reed, as well as all the other interviews that I've done here on the program over the past several years. So again, the website is everythingfinancialradio.com. And a quick reminder as I close, we do have a couple of Social Security maximization workshops coming up in October here in the Grand Rapids area. Thursday, October 13, we'll be at the Highlands Golf Club. And on Tuesday, October 18, out at Noto's Old World Italian Restaurant. The workshops begin at 6 p.m. and conclude at 7:30 p.m. with a complimentary dinner. To register or get more information, it's socialsecurityradio.com.